For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And a good Monday, a good post-London Monday morning to all of you out there, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. This is Phillies Therapy. My name is Paul Boyer, joined as always by The Athletic's Matt Gelb. Here we are on the other side of the ocean after the London series wrapped up. The Phillies and Mets played another home-and-home. I guess we can call it that. We have to call it that. One game was away, one game was at home. The Phillies split it, although I guess you could say that they ended up completing a sweep of the road series, right? Mid-May, they won the Saturday game. That was the road game. You know, make of it what you will. The Phillies split the two games. One game fairly normal until the ninth inning was a little bit close. And then the Sunday game happened, and that was more along the lines of what we were expecting to, at least on Europe. That ninth inning was classic Phillies-Mets. And so the Phillies stand at 45-20. They are coming back home. They are traveling back across the pond to start a very big six-game road trip against two AL East teams at Boston, at Baltimore, which should be a very fun weekend series. Let's bring in my co-host. Matt, hello. I know you weren't able to go to London. I was also sad that I wasn't able to go to London for very different reasons. But what were you able to make of these two games? As much as we can take away from two games, a two-game series against a familiar foe in a completely strange environment, what can we take away from this weekend and what happened and what went down?
Well, they're not going to play the Mets for a while, which I think they're going to miss because I think they match up pretty well against the Mets, and the Mets are in rough shape. But the next time they see the Mets, they probably will look very different. I mean, they're not going to see the Mets again until September. And
wow, yeah, you're right.
You know, they get seven against the Mets, you know, really in the twilight of the season, which could be a good thing for the Phillies because I do think the Mets will end up selling off some of their pieces. Mm-hmm. But taking away from this weekend, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I think it's funny. I mean, two of the most maligned players in the roster, Whit Merrifield and Taijuan Walker, you know, had good weekends.
They did.
And I think in the bigger picture, part of things that's a good thing for the Phillies. I mean, they probably should have won both games. They didn't. And you know, they came out of it without any injuries as far as we know. And I think that's, you know, you're going to hear, this is going to get, I don't say boring, but I mean, the theme for the remainder of this season now is like, just don't get hurt,
avoid
some sort of catastrophe because, you know, nothing is guaranteed. Although I would say that it's pretty much guaranteed that they're going to make the playoffs somehow. You know, again, coming in today, the models give them, you know, 99% chance. And you know, we talked about this when we did our live stream, but I'll run it back here with updated stats. So there's been 21 teams since baseball integrated in 1947 that won 45 games in their first 65.
Okay.
Just like these Phillies have, 45 and 20.
Yep.
And the worst record of those 21 teams was 96 wins by the 1952 Brooklyn Dodgers. And that was the longest one to go. I mean, every team since then has won at least 97, and most of them have won 99 or 100. And we should start thinking about this team in that way. I mean, we should start thinking about this team as a team that could become the best regular season team in Phillies history, which is 102 games by the 2011 team.
They might.
And it's okay to want that and also want a championship. I mean, you can't, having one thing doesn't mean that you don't have the other. And I think at this point, Phillies fans should get greedy. You should want to have both. Mm-hmm. You should want to be able to say that I watched the best regular season team in Phillies history, because it's kind of a cool thing to say. And Paul, I think you mentioned this. I mean, like, we still talk about the 2011 team. They didn't get past the first round, and it was, you know, heartbreaking for a lot of people, and it was really the sign, you know, the end of an era, a great era of Phillies baseball. But I mean, that team was so enjoyable to watch and so dominant, and, you know, still sticks in everyone's mind because it was a team that did things that we just don't see very often.
Yeah, it's 100% true. You know, the Dodger point that you make, that was probably pre 162 games in the season, right? So they maybe could have even had more wins than that, just like in a raw total. I can't remember.
True, they only played 153 that year.
Yeah, there you go. So like, they're in some pretty good company. Things would have to go, and I know we as Philly people are accustomed to bracing ourselves for the weirdest and worst possible things to happen. I think it's not reasonable, but anybody who's grown up being a fan of these teams can feel part of themselves expect to have a team get off to a historic start and be the team that ends up, you know, winning 80 games or something ridiculous. I don't think that's going to happen here, but I think that inhabits a small part of all of our brains. It's been a joy to watch this team. And now that we get to a point where we are months into a season, we are watching a team that's gone 37-12 since they started 8-8.
And what's your updated stat about their margin in their losses?
Oh, right. So half of their season loss total, right? Their last 10 losses, which again, yes, stretch back to the end of April.
Yes.
Updated with the Sunday loss, which was another one by one run. The last 10 losses have been by a combined 16 runs. So like, it's not
even... And like half of those are in extra innings.
And they're in extra innings. If they're losing games, they're still in it. You know, if you coin flip a couple of those games, maybe they're 50-15. I don't know. I mean, they're not. They're literally not. But that's what this team is doing right now. Even when they're losing, they're in these games. They are making it close. They had a really tough ninth inning on Sunday, and they still almost made it work. They got really, really close. They lost in hilarious fashion. It took a great play from their catcher to pull off that double play. That wasn't an easy play, and especially with Garrett Stubbs going for the leg sweep there, that was not an easy play to pull off, and they did. So the Phillies right now are just, even their losses, they continue to ride high. It's wild. And now, this week, probably later this week, maybe around the time they get to Baltimore, we get to look forward to Trey Turner probably coming back. On top of all of this, this team is playing so well. Edmundo Sosa stepped in so well in Trey Turner's absence. And now you bring back the guy who was hitting 340. Put him back in your lineup. Your MVP candidate. Your multi-$100 million man, shortstop. He gets to come back and join all of this. The team that was somehow playing better while he was out for a month and a half. It is weird to say these things out loud. And yet here we are. The Phillies are just that good. And I think I can start saying that more comfortably. It does all come down to health. And now the Phillies are adding to that health. It's great. This is a test, though. This upcoming road trip is a test. And I will be very interested to see how they perform. I'm not going to like read too much into it if they go 2-4. These things happen. You know, Baltimore is a very good team. Boston can be trouble. You know, they're not.
I mean, they're catching the Red Sox at a great time.
Mm-hmm.
They are really, really banged up. I mean, if you go look at their lineup, some of their box scores the last few days, I mean, it's not good. Now, the Red Sox would say that they're probably catching the Phillies at a good time because they're coming off of London, and there's definitely going to be, you know, I mean, there's some concern, and you're going to see some weird Phillies lineups, I think. I think you're going to see Rob Thompson, you know, try to shuffle guys in and out, you know, probably use, you know, more of his roster here, at least in the first 2 days at Fenway Park. I do think that their biggest concern about this trip, the London trip, wasn't, you know, the travel there, you know, getting accustomed there, avoiding injury on the weird turf, the different circumstances. Their biggest concern was coming back and getting reacclimated to East Coast time. And then just, you know, somebody having a soft tissue injury or something, you know, just from all the travel, all the, you know, time sitting in a chair and the disrupted routine, et cetera. Yeah. So I do think you'll see them be extra careful, you know, at least the first few days in Fenway. So you'll see you'll probably see some funky lineups.
And old friend Nick Pivetta will take the bump on
Wednesday. Oh, is he starting? He's starting. Oh, yes.
The projected starter, Christopher Sanchez versus Nick Pivetta on Wednesday. Nice. Thank you to Twitch chat for the tip there. Yeah, The Red Sox are, they're 500 right now, but they have a positive run differential. They're I think a sneaky team in that they've got talent. You know, they've got good players on this team. Rafael Devers really is hurt. Always, you know, yeah, he's always somebody to watch out for. I'm amazed at the stat line I just look at with Rob Refsnyder, the journeyman, in his 130
plate appearances. Third for them.
Hitting 336 with a 900 OPS. That is not what I expect out of Rob Refsnyder. But this,
they've
this
pitched really well. Yes. Yeah, they've had some good starting pitching, and now they've had some, you know, they've had neck some injuries that starting pitching. Yeah,
neck and neck with the Phillies rotation near the top of the league. That was what was keeping them afloat for a long time. They got a good bullpen too. You know, it'll be a challenge, I think, to score a lot of runs on paper here, even with Fenway, I think, playing a little bit more hitter friendly lately these days.
And then over the weekend, those games are sold out. I mean, at least Saturday and Sunday. I think Friday is close to a sellout at Camden Yards, and that's going to be fun. I mean, the Phillies have lined up Suarez, Walker, and Wheeler. And right now, Father's Day on Sunday sets up to be Zach Wheeler against Corbin Burns. And that's write that in pencil, because the Orioles have done – they have been moving around the rotation, kind of rearranging things because they wanted to get – I think it's because they've been trying to get Kyle Bradish some extra time.
Okay.
He's coming back from an injury. But that's going to be fun. I mean, that is it's going to be billed as a World Series preview, although I know that the national media is all worn out after, you know, the Dodgers-Yankees series over the weekend, which, you know, rightfully so, got a lot of attention. And we now know what all the networks are rooting for very clearly, and that would be a Dodgers-Yankees World Series. But I think that the games of Baltimore this weekend are going to be fun. It's going to be a cool atmosphere. There's going to be a lot of Phillies fans down there. And we're going to see two really good teams go at it.
Two very different teams. Yeah. The Orioles slug the crap out of the ball. It'll be a good test for this pitching staff. I do wonder that the point you just made about who might want what World Series matchup. Part of me has wondered what the rest of the baseball fandom world thinks about the Phillies as this core progresses, because I try and look at them from that detached perspective, that slightly more objective perspective. And I think about the 2022 team and how they kind of surprised everybody. And it was the emergence of like the himbo mentality, the beefy boys. They're like, oh, look at these guys. They just kind of sauntered their way in there. They had the first upset of the Braves. They're just making it work. They had a really exciting, even though it was only five games, series against the Padres. It was a matchup of underdogs.
I mean, they were going up against the Astros, and everybody, you know, nationally, most people hate the Astros. So that was like an easy one. Yeah.
And then, you know, last year it's like, oh, okay, they're back at it again. And then they had the script flipped on them, and the plucky upstarts upset them before they went on to lose to the Rangers in the World Series. And now I'm like, okay, the Phillies are going to be entering their third year of making the postseason. Right, third straight year. They are coming into it without any element of surprise. I think the book is out. It's understood that they have some stars in the lineup and they have some stars on the pitching staff, and they are now going to come into this thing, especially with the Braves being diminished. They're going to come into this thing looking like one of the two National League favorites, them and the Dodgers. And everybody is going to expect them and the Dodgers to play in the LCS.
Correct.
And the saying, nobody likes us, we don't care, from the Eagles. Yeah, okay, that is broadly the mentality of Philly sports here. I do kind of want people to root for this team, though, outside of Philadelphia. I think it would be cool to have a little bit of that support, a little bit of that juice. I don't want people coming into this if the Phillies and Dodgers play in the LCS and it becomes one of those things and it's chalk, and anybody who's not attached to one of those two teams just kind of rolls their eyes. Which happens. I get that. I do that too. I think Philadelphia is, you know, maybe a shade below New York and Boston on the national we don't really like you scale. That's okay. I do want people to root for the team because I do think it is a fun team. Yes, it has Philadelphia in the name, but there's a lot of really fun stuff happening here. And there are fun players and there are good personalities. And I just don't, it would be a cherry on top if we could get a little bit of that push, a little bit of that national support, where everybody isn't throwing their weight behind, you know, a Dodgers Yankees World Series, where if the Phillies are the ones who end up representing the NL and they do make it back there, that because it is their second time in the World Series in 3 years, because it would be their third straight LCS, that people aren't just like tired of this team. It would be nice. It would be. I'll admit that. It would be nice to have a little bit of extra backing. We're fine. We're self-sufficient on our own. We don't need you out there. But I think it would be cool if people realize, oh, yeah, actually, I know it's Philadelphia, but this team is kind of fun.
And it was funny, like Bryce Harper after, I think it was after the first game in London, was just kind of like, you know, talking about all the fan support and all the, you know, random people who he's met in London who, you know, we're not necessarily Phillies fans, but we're interested in the Phillies. And he's like, well, hop on the bandwagon. It was very funny. It was an all time pander yeah. right there. But I don't care who you are, or, you know, what you root for. But yeah, I mean, it's funny, Paul, because right now, and I'm trying to avoid doing this because it is June 10th and, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot that's going to happen between now and October. But it's hard not to view every 9-inning sample without thinking about how does it relate to October? How does it matter? Why does it matter in relation to October? Mm-hmm. And that's why I was thinking about Sunday's game in that way. And we were talking about it right as we signed off on our little live stream. And there's two outs in the sixth inning, right?
Yes, when Walker gets subbed out.
Walker comes out and Rob Thompson goes to Gregory Soto. And it's a lefty at the plate. And this to me is his spot. This is why he's on the roster. It's for the middle innings against a lefty. And you want to know, can this guy get this out? Like, can he fill this role for us in October? Because this is possibly where he'd be coming into a game. And maybe in October, you know, they'd be more aggressive and they're going right to Alvarado or Strom right there, you know, because that's how Rob Thompson is managed. And Gregory Soto did not get his guy. And now he's got to face a righty, and JD Martinez gets a base hit off of him. And they weren't two hard hit balls, but they were base hits, and he didn't get the outs. And,
right.
you know, Gregory Soto has struggled. And I think he's been, you know, probably one of the bigger disappointments this year. And when you can say that about the sixth guy in your bullpen, that's fifth guy, whatever you want to call him, mm-hmm. That's a good thing. So, I mean, that's first world problems again. But, this is why they're using him in a spot. I mean, because you want to know, you need to know, like, do we have to go get someone else? Do we have to figure out who we trust in that situation? Like, can this guy do it? And he needs to get chances to do it. And I just looked this up, and I do think this is relevant to everything that we've talked about. The Phillies this year, Paul, have had 21 appearances in which a pitcher has gotten four outs or more, a reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is the fewest in baseball by a lot.
Really?
The next closest is 29.
Oh, wow.
Let's compare it in comparison. Like Arizona, for example, has had 69 appearances.
Oh, my goodness.
Of four outs or more by reliever. Milwaukee's got 72. And Milwaukee, some of that is because they've used a lot of openers.
A lot of openers. But, yeah.
I mean, the Phillies have done this on purpose. I'm telling you, they've done this for a reason, is they are trying to manage their relievers now so that they have the best version of them come October. And Strom is a perfect example of that. You know, Strom has had an unbelievable season. He has been remarkable.
Yep.
His stuff, I think, is sharper. It's better. They have not pushed him like they pushed him last year. And right. that is by design. I mean, obviously, last year he had to start for them the first 6 weeks of the season, racked up a lot of innings. We saw him kind of dip in stuff middle of the year, kind of June, July was, it's just okay. And then they did give him some more time in July. There were fewer appearances. They didn't push him as much. And then come August and September, he was better for them. And then obviously in October, he was a guy for them. Got the last out of the NLDS. I think this is, they're doing all this by design. I mean, you've seen them push guys for multiple innings at times. Ryan Kirkering did it on Saturday, got five outs and was tremendous.
Yep.
Jeff Hoffman did it on Sunday because they were kind of in a, you know, they're in a situation here where the schedule almost allowed for it, right? I mean, it was almost like a playoff series because there's so many off days around these two games. So they could push some of the relievers. But they have followed really strict rules with how they've used their bullpen. And I do think that it's all with October in mind. And so whenever you see Rob Thompson make decisions in games like Gregory Soto in the sixth inning there, it is all about trying to think about October. And is that going to lead to short-term frustration or daily frustration at times with the way he's making lineup decisions, with, you know, JT Realmuto's getting an off day and he's not going to pinch hit? This is an off day for him. You know, in the moment, yes, it's going to be frustrating, but I think it's hard to have it both ways right now when everyone is saying, oh, it's great that they're playing well, but it doesn't matter if they don't win in October. Well, you can't come back and then say, well, how could you use this guy that way, or why'd you do this? Well, it's because we're thinking about October.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwood1.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The thing that is probably the hardest to explain for people who don't watch baseball a lot, and not even as much as you and I, like, you don't have to be somebody who watches 1,000 hours of baseball every year. If you look at some of these games and you're like, well, why are we using something less than our best guy in this spot? You know, why are we not pressing the button to put the best reliever or the best pinch hitter in a certain situation? Is you can't approach every single game, like you were saying, as if, you know, I keep coming back to this. The Eagles season is a 10th of the length of a baseball season, where you have, you know, 16, now 17 games, where you expect everything has to be maximized for that one game. Every bit of strategy, everything of your game plan goes into taking that one matchup, because every single game means that much more in the perspective of a regular season, informing then your ability to clinch a playoff berth. Because a baseball season is stretched out the way it is, you have to manage a roster differently. You have to manage a game differently. If you have a situation where this is the sixth inning, if it was one inning later, I could understand the confusion even that much more. But it makes a difference on a level that small.
Well, it also makes a difference in that, like, you know, they're 45-20. I mean, that, like, again, if they're scratching and clawing to try to get in the playoff picture, or, you know, to get back in top of the division. And I know, like, you know, this lead can evaporate overnight. I get it. You know, nine games is a lot, though. Nine games is a lot. 65 games in the season, they have a 9-game lead. That is a lot.
Yeah.
But that also colors how you make daily decisions right now.
It does, right? And the point that you made about can we use this guy is really salient. Because as the season progresses, and assuming the lead stays relatively comfortable, and they start to get to a point where they are actually really locking themselves into a playoff run, You're not just waiting until September to find out if a guy can perform for you, right?
This is like Rob Thompson 101 yesterday. Yeah. I've written a lot about this, but this is about like, if he doesn't use Soto in that spot, and trust me, I know, I've seen this, like Soto likes high, he wants to pitch in high leverage spots. And the answer, of course, is pitch better. And yes, but like he wants right. those chances. And if he doesn't get them, he does get frustrated. And if he gets passed over for those often, or gets, you know, relegated simply to low leverage spots, you've probably lost the guy. Mm. And, you know, again, we don't know if he's going to be, it's trending toward him not being a big, big player for them in October, but you want to, you don't want to lose the guy in June. You want to hold on to him because you don't know. Maybe he is.
Right. And or maybe somebody gets hurt. You know, that's the whole thing. What if Alvarado, you know, heaven forbid, has to go down for for some time late in September? Like, you want to make sure that if that happens and you're past the time where you can make a meaningful external move to address it, that the guys you have in house can pick up the slack if that's what it comes down to.
Yep.
And I can't even hit Soto that hard for that performance, because it wasn't a great pitch that Nimmo hit, but he did have to push it the other way. It did have to go down the left field line. It wasn't smoked. It wasn't a gapper. It wasn't, you know, lined straight through somebody. It was not super well struck. And with a better bounce or a better line, you know, maybe it gets a little bit more under it and flies out. That's just what happened. He didn't give up.
Yeah.
A really winning.
Yeah. I mean, independent of that outing, it's just emblematic of what he's kind of been this year. And been less than what is needed. And especially against lefties now, right? Last year, lefties had a 432 OPS against him. And this year, in a much smaller sample, obviously, it's 745. And if he's not going to get righties out, which he has shown consistently that he can't, I mean, mm-hmm. he really struggled against them last year and is even worse this year against righties.
It's not good.
He's got to be able to get lefties out. He's mm-hmm. got to be able to get lefties out. I mean, you start looking at the different matchups, right? You start thinking about October, right? Okay, what teams are they going to be facing? Well, you know, maybe the Braves, and maybe you want him on Matt Olson in a very mm-hmm. similar spot where there's two outs an inning and there's a runner on base. You know, maybe you want him on Freddie Freeman. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want him for the Ohtani Freeman pocket in the middle of a playoff game.
You're right. Christian Yelich.
You don't want to burn your best lefty middle of the game. You need a left on left matchup with a runner on base. You need to know if this guy can do it. And maybe he can't, but you got to know. And you also don't want to rule him out yet. You just got to keep him. You got to keep him engaged, keep him involved. And like you said, yeah, the result, it wasn't the worst pitch. Bad result. The Martinez at bat, you know, not a good matchup for him. Terrible matchup. Yeah. And it was a terrible result. You got to keep trying. And that's, you know, this all also relates to the trade deadline, is that you mm-hmm. have 6 weeks here, roughly, until the trade deadline. And maybe you decide you want to get another reliever, but in those 6 weeks, you need to see Dominguez and Soto, and you need to see, what do we got? Can we trust them? Do we have to go get somebody?
Yep. And speaking of going and getting somebody, the Phillies can expect to have a little bit of injured list cavalry coming back over the next week and change.
And now we get some roster intrigue.
Yes, we do. Trey Turner expected back late this week, maybe around this weekend. Brandon Marsh also expected to be a light stay on the injured list. Two guys who are going to come back and immediately slot back into the major league roster. This is where things get a little interesting. With one of these guys returning, it seems pretty straightforward and easy. Weston Wilson would get optioned. He's the one with the flexibility, and you can postpone a decision on Whit Merrifield or Christian Pache until later. Well, we got two guys coming back, and that's where things get a little bit interesting. Because you need to have two spots on the active roster, you now have a bit of intrigue. You have Pache, you have Merrifield, you have David Dahl, who has looked really quite good in his short little cameo here with his two home runs already. But all three of those guys are out of options. Meaning, if you are to activate, say Marsh is the last one to return, whoever it is, one of those two guys is the second one to return, you need to clear a spot on the 26-man roster. And because those guys are out of options, they would need to be exposed to waivers, whether by designation for assignment or straight waivers if they've already been placed for those guys. Probably not, but that's sometimes how it happens. Or in a more unlikely case, a trade of some sort, whether for cash or a player to be named. Somebody's got to go. Somebody's got to get moved. Pache and Merrifield have not performed very well in their run. David Dahl has, but it's a very small sample. Matt, I think there's an interesting decision to be made here based on the guys coming back. Turner comes in, he will resume being the starting shortstop. Marsh comes back, he will resume being the long side lefty bat, you know, mostly
strong side of guy.
Yeah. What happens with David Dahl, Whit Merrifield, and Chris Pache, assuming one of the moves is Weston Wilson being optioned back to Lehigh?
I think it comes down to Dahl versus Pache, and I think it comes down to what do you want. And when they started the season, they decided they did not want a traditional left-handed bat on the bench outside of Garrett Stubbs. And at the time, the reasoning was they shipped Jake Cave to Colorado, and Rob Thompson says, you know, if there is a opportunity late in the game to pinch hit, most likely for Johan Rojas against a tough righty reliever, I trust Whit Merrifield over any other lefty bat that we have. And that was at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. Now that's probably not the case. And I think that that has changed the equation. I think that's why Dahl, not just because of what he's done, he is interesting. And because he gives you that traditional lefty bat off the bench. Pache, you know, has had limited time, and it's a very tough role, especially for a younger player. We forget that he's only 25.
Right.
And just hasn't, I don't know if he's done enough to like justify that spot. I guess there's another scenario, Paul, in which they send Johan Rojas to AAA to keep everybody, but I don't think so. In fact, I actually looked this up. I mean, would you believe that in the last 14 days, I mean, they really, the offense has not been good. but Rojas in the last, you know, 14 days is 9 for 25, all singles, 3 stolen bases. Hmm. You know, he's got only 2 strikeouts in his 26 plate appearances. I mean, he's, you know, he's batting 360, you know, over that stretch. And I mean, that is a lot better than most of our guys have done. I mean, it's really, you know, Sosa's fallen off, Bohm has fallen off, Stott has fallen off big time. JT, since he came back from the knee thing, has been really bad. You know, it's mostly been Harper, Castellanos, a little bit of Schwarber, some Rojas, and then, you know, Marsh and Dahl before Marsh got hurt.
Yeah.
I think it's Dahl or Pache, and I think you could make a compelling case for Dahl. I don't think they're at a point where they cut bait on Merrifield yet. Do you agree with this?
I'm not sure if I want to agree, because I think I have seen enough of Whit Merrifield to understand that he's probably going to look like this or some version of this for the rest of this year. I don't really see some kind of breakout coming. I do like the home run he hit on Saturday, and like that was nice. But I'm not seeing a ton out of him right now. I do think that I can't rule out the Rojas option. I'm sure they don't want to do that, but it does tie into the line of thinking that I've had lately, where as we get closer to the trade deadline and we start thinking about, you know, optimizing on the margins, like we're thinking about tweaking this 45-20 team to be the most Megatron it possibly can. If you've given Rojas quote unquote enough seasoning where he's had all this run, he started a lot of games, he doesn't look overwhelmed. You know, he's only struck out 29 times, 182 plate appearances, but he still hasn't found a way to make good contact when he does get the bat on the ball. That maybe you can feel a little bit better about sending him down to get a little more work while you preserve and give an extra look to some of these other guys who may help you fill out a playoff roster. I think even if you option Rojas now or soon, he's still going to be on your playoff roster. He is going to make the playoff team. He will be there. What capacity it'll be, I don't know, TBD. Probably start a few games. But he'll be on it. He'll make it, even if he gets optioned. He'll be back.
Yeah, but to me, if you're choosing... Yeah, I mean, to me, Pache is way more expendable than Rojas right now. But you know, the other thing too they could say is, okay, so if you decide to DFA Pache, for example, now you've taken away Marsh's platoon partner. So now you're definitely committing to more time for Merrifield and left.
Yes.
Which he's here for. So if you're keeping him, then that should be something you're comfortable with if you're the front office and the manager.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say you do the other thing. Let's say you get rid of Pache, you keep Dahl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Let's say you get rid of Dahl and you keep Pache.
Oh, right.
You know, Clemens comes back. He probably gets, optioned at that point then. But if you're getting rid of Dahl, it's a vote for Clemens. Because you're saying, we think that long term, you know, down the line later this year, if we do want a left-handed bat off the bench, we think that Clemens is the difference between Clemens and Dahl is not significant.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting rid of Dahl right now, that would be sort of your vote for that, which maybe, you know, just Clemens gives him a little more flexibility because he can play more positions than Dahl can, less seasoned in that sort of reserve role. I guess, like, you kind of look at it also from this perspective transactionally, is who is likeliest to collect interest right now from another team, Dahl or Pache?
I still think that's
Dahl.
I still think that's a bit of a toss up because of Pache's defense. I still feel like he could be a fourth outfielder on a number of teams.
So, but this is what I'm getting at here, is if you want them to keep Dahl, then you are going to get more Merrifield and left field as a result of that.
It sounds like a threat when you put it that way.
This is not a threat. If they demote Rojas, now you're committing to Brandon Marsh, more Brandon Marsh center field, which, you know, I think they like him in left field, and he's been one of the best left field defenders in baseball, and I think that is important. It is one of the reasons why they pitched so well, is because their outfield defense has been really good. And if you're committing to more Marsh in center with some sort of Marsh Pache platoon in center, now you're committing to a Dahl Merrifield Pache or a Dahl Merrifield platoon in left field. So you're running two platoons, center field, left field, and they're kind of doing that now. I get that, but
I think it underscores how important Rojas is despite his offensive production.
Stay out there and catch all the balls.
Yeah, it's just that there's a domino effect here.
I don't think you're demoting him. And also, there's other factors in this. If you're demoting him right now, do you lose him? Like, does that affect his confidence? Is it? I don't know.
I would hope not. You know, it goes back into saying, I would hope the message has been conveyed to him, you know, through this playing time and to this point that, yeah, you'll be back, even if that does happen. But you know, when you're walking through the steps and laying it out, I'm like, yeah, it does cause more issues.
Most interesting decision they've had to make, you know, coming up this, unless there's another injury or something this week, this is the most interesting roster decision they've had to make so far this year, I think. Yeah.
I feel like the most likely option is that, yes, Pache goes, but that somebody is interested in him.
You think they keep Dahl?
I think there's a good chance, even with, I'm not relying on the small sample. I think from the way he was obliterating AAA, and maybe they feel good about keeping him until Clemens gets back. You know, maybe that's more interesting. Pache, I'm sure they would.
What Pache does for you? What does Pache do?
Right. What is he? I'm sure they wouldn't like to, quote, give up on a guy who, you know, again, is still in his mid 20s, but his role will not be expanded the way the Phillies currently are running things. And if he can't be trusted in, or he can't quickly adapt to this reserve role, and he's striking out way too much,
it's a tough role.
You can't make it. It is a hard role. It's hard to ask somebody who, you know, regardless of their prospect status, and Pache, you know, we do recall 3 years ago, like, this is a global top 100 prospect. People were very, very high on Christian Pache's future all around. Not just from a defensive standpoint. They thought, you know, this was a guy who could probably hit a little bit too and actually make it work. But if you're asking a guy to come in early on in his career and make this his habitat where he lives, it can be hard to assimilate into that. I don't blame Christian for any bit of this. Like, this isn't an indictment of his overall ability or what he could have provided somebody in a different universe or in a different timeline. But right now on this timeline for this team and what they need and what they are trying to do, it just, the time has to be running out. And I feel like
someone claims him.
I think they could play chicken with the Phillies and, you know, maybe somebody lower on the rungs puts in a claim and gets him. Somebody could jump the line and offer some cash. I don't know if he's even player to be named caliber right now.
I don't know if anyone, I don't know. I can see his value. I get it. I mean, it's great to have that kind of guy you can bring in late in a game for defense. He runs well.
Sure.
Although he has not stolen a base this year. He has speed, but is not a great base runner, I guess. And there's a difference, obviously, but
sure.
David Dahl, like, I haven't totally bought in there, and he is more of a one dimensional player, and that one dimension could be very good lefty pop off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the way left field is constructed, you know, that's, you know, Dahl, if you're keeping him, his primary role will be to pinch hit for Rojas late in games if they're trailing. And, you know, and occasionally against a righty, they move Marsh over to center and Dahl plays left, you know, against a righty. Maybe once a week.
It may seem like a small potatoes thing we're discussing.
But this is why, right. But important. I mean, yeah, this is, again, we're thinking about October, right? And who is likelier to have a bigger role in October, Dave Dahl or Chris Pache? And I guess Dahl, because you're going to want that pinch hitter for Rojas.
Yes. I think that's what it comes down to.
And it's not Merrifield, and it's not Merrifield yet.
Yeah. I mean, Cody Clemens maybe beats him out by the time he's healthy, you know.
Sure, but while Clemens can be an option, and that's, you know,
exactly.
Again, it's going to work against his favor. He might be better for the role than Dahl, maybe not, but he has an option, and Dahl doesn't.
Right. And this team prioritizes that flexibility, right? It takes a situation like this where backs are up against the wall, so to speak, and you have to let somebody go. There is no infinite number of options.
Right. And in a lot of ways, David Dahl has found money, right? I mean, so sure. Maybe they're just like, you know, he filled a role that we needed and, you know, now it's time to move on. But I do think, yeah, because of how he performed at AAA and how he's performed in the majors in a very small sample, it's like, you know, it would sting to say, we think this guy might be something, but we don't have space for him, and you let him go. And then he goes and bees. Great. Also, like, what team needs an outfielder right now badly, especially a left-handed hitting one?
Go ahead.
It's not a trick question. The Braves.
Oh.
They could use another lefty hitting outfielder right
now.
Yes, they could. And I would be willing to bet that the Braves put in a waiver claim on Dave Dahl. The Phillies wouldn't trade him to the Braves. Like, even if the Braves say, hey, we want this, you know, we're willing to jump the waiver wire, I don't think the Phillies would say, oh, yeah, here you go.
Right.
But if he goes on waivers and nobody else puts a claim in and he gets to the Braves, you know, would be pretty surprised if they didn't put a claim in on him.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, sure. And these are the extra dominoes that come with this. Right. And this is why part of the reason why the Phillies are usually so reluctant to put guys through waivers or to move guys off the active roster like this. It has to take a situation like this where they have no other choice, essentially just a choice between guys who have
they've built, you know, they've built really good depth. I mean, Dave Dahl was a minor league signing right before spring training started. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, I remember that guy. And, you know, he played well at AAA and he's been a contributor in the majors. So these are good problems. And yeah, it seems silly for us to waste as much time as we have thinking about this. But, you know, this is the point they're at. I mean, they're 45-20. They have a 9-game lead. And you're trying to figure out how do we best construct this roster? And it's all in relation to October.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So that's the amount of intrigue that is coming up over the next week. It's lower on the priority list. Don't get me wrong. We're all more intrigued by Brandon Marsh and Trey Turner coming back. Don't you twist those words. And they should be coming back, barring any further setbacks, which is wonderful. It'll be nice to have the team at very near full strength once they are activated and get themselves back onto the field. And then we'll have to wait to see what the roster manipulation is around that, because that is about where we are right now. But this week should be fun. If you want to see the Phillies get tested, especially this weekend on the road, a team that has, you know, serious postseason aspirations, implications, not just to make it anymore, but to actually make a deep run. The Orioles themselves are 20 games over 500. It's going to be a good series. It's really going to be a good series. I am excited for it. I hope that Sunday matchup comes through. If Wheeler and Burns end up facing off against one another, that's all you can ask for.
Zach Wheeler wants blood for that Cy Young that he should have had.
Oh boy. No, I'm already excited for that. Not to overlook Boston, but that is a highlight series.
We didn't talk about the Buddy Kennedy acquisition.
Oh, you mean Clifton, Jersey, tip to tip. You say he was born in Millville.
Is that his name?
Right?
His name is Clifton.
His real name is Clifton. Matt, I replied to you on the old Twitter with that.
I'm sorry.
You know what? All right.
No. I was very, very, very little social media time this past weekend. I tweeted out about Buddy Kennedy, and that was
that's the way to go. Yeah. So his real name is Clifton, which, as real New Jersey people know, is a town in North Jersey.
Yeah.
He was born in Millville, which, as Jersey people know, or even if you don't, via Mike Trout, is in South Jersey. He's tip-to-tip Jersey. Yay!
I don't even consider Millville South Jersey. Millville is Delaware.
Wow.
It's way down there. It's way down there.
Well, sure. That's why it's the South.
Yeah, well.
Hello?
Everyone's always says that Mike Trout is from Philly or from the Philly area, and Millville is most decidedly not the Philadelphia area, the greater Philadelphia area. It's basically Delaware.
Yeah, it is pretty far down there.
Yeah, good depth piece. I mean, he basically replaces the Jose Rodriguez, who got suspended for a year. They had an open 40-man spot, and they should be using those 40-man spots, and they have. They've actually been aggressive there. They got a fella named Freddie Tarnock.
Yes.
Once a decent prospect, he's going to go pitch at AAA.
The former Brave and A, correct?
Yeah, he was a Braves draft pick.
Yeah.
So he'll go pitch at AAA. I mean, there's something there. I mean, their upper levels are pretty rough right now. Like,
yeah,
not just because of injury, but because they weren't very good to start with. And injuries haven't helped. Injuries at the big league level, injuries at the AAA and AA level as well. So, they did make some smaller acquisitions here to try to at least put a competitive product at those levels, but it's not great.
Along those lines, there were some minor league promotions, I believe, over the weekend. I don't know if they've been made official yet, but this feels like one item to kind of end on, especially as it relates to Aiden Miller, who it sounds like will be promoted to Jersey Shore, the Blue Claws.
I'm legitimately surprised that it's happened this quick.
It does feel a little fast, even as good as he's looked. Every time I see a highlight of his swing, I'm like, man, that looks good. It does seem a little quick, but hey, if they think he's ready, then they think he's ready. Other guys like George Klassen getting promoted.
Past time. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's too old for that league. He needs to move up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He's been really good. I mean, no doubt. Yes, and he's interesting. I wrote about him earlier this year, but needs a new challenge.
Yeah, he does need a new challenge. So a little bit of roster shuffling, a little bit of guys, you know, finding different fits. Hopefully we get to a point where we get a positive news update on Andrew Painter, not even that he has to pitch in a game this summer. Just, you know,
I mean, he's not even at, I need to ask about him, but he's not even at a year yet for the surgery.
Yeah.
Right? It was like late.
Yeah, it was
middle July, late July.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
I think it was late July.
I just want to know if my baby's okay.
I mean, he's not your baby, and also, I'm sure he's fine. I'm just looking at the date. July 25th. 6th?
Oh, okay.
July 25th. I'm telling you, they're being very slow with him. Like,
good. Yeah, that's fine.
Slow, which is the way they should be handling a 20-year-old who had Tommy John.
Yeah, yeah. Just want to know that he's okay. So that's basically that.
Matt, for you.
Thank you. It sounds like apart from that, you've got some news and notes coming this week at The Athletic. Anything else in the pipeline we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I have a couple good ones that I won't tell you what they are, but I have some good ideas. I have ideas, and you know, it has to start with an idea. All we are is our ideas, and most of my ideas are bad. Sometimes they're decent, sometimes they're great. Most of them are just bad to decent, but I have some ideas for this trip. So,
well, you know, the last time you teased like that, you had the Sosa story, which was fantastic. So, you know, you've got a bar to clear there.
Yeah. I'm excited to be back on the road with the club. I'm going to meet them in Boston tomorrow and go to Baltimore. And I think I'm doing a lot of the road trips most of the road trips, you know, through August, or at least to the beginning of August, I'll do a lot of the road games. And I think that'll be good because they're going to be on the road a lot in July and August. And there'll be some interesting tests for them. They have like Chicago and Atlanta, and they have like Seattle, LA, Arizona. Like there's some good trips coming up for them that'll really tell us about this team. But I think we have a pretty good idea.
I would think so. The Phillies, as we finish up recording here on Monday, stand at 45-20. They do indeed have a 9-game lead over the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. Currently the largest division lead of any team. We're down to talking about who's going to make it work on the bench. things just continue to be pretty good right now. Trey Turner and Brandon Marsh are coming back. I don't know. The Phillies split the London series, but it's hard not to continue to feel really, really good about the way this team is going. Hopefully that keeps up. Go and check out Matt's stuff at The Athletic. Thank you, as always, to everybody who tuned in, both for this episode to this point and those of you out there on Twitch. Hello. Thank you for being part of this community, as always. For Matt, I am Paul. This has been Phillies Therapy, part of the Believe Podcast Network, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks again.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.